For you to turn to Exodus chapter 2, and we're going to start a series on the life of Moses. And I want you to think about, looking at Moses, I want you to think about the idea of justice, even this week. It's been a crazy week. What happens to you when justice isn't done? I know I was watching sports with my youngest son, and I knew that there were two blow pops left, two great blow pops, and I wanted one, and I thought it would be fair if he had one and I had one, and he was eating one. I was about ready to, I wasn't noticing how fast or he was eating the one that he had, and little did I didn't even realize that he had gotten up and snatched the second one and started eating it. I thought he was still on the first one, and I got up, and it was gone. I thought, are you kidding me? This is wrong. I wanted a blow pop. I wanted to watch sports, and I love blow pops. I love you get to the gum, you start chewing. It's marvelous. It's a great experience, and justice was not done, and I was I wanted to, all right, Jake, let's wrestle. Let's wrestle on the floor. I want justice. You know, if you have small examples like that, and then you have heart-wrenching examples of some of you know Jeff Allender, who was here with us for a number of years, and he called me on Wednesday at 1:45 saying, Frank, we have to pray right now for peace because there is a shooter on the campus of my son. His son was going to the middle school, and that'd be kind of like Farnell and Mary Bryant, and his son was at the middle school. And you just hear this trembling father. He was crying, and we were praying, and we wanted the crooked to be made straight. We wanted the rough places made plain. And, you know, when you think about the gospel, when you think about peace or justice, the prophet Isaiah says in Isaiah 1, he says, learn to do right, seek justice, Israel, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Psalm 106 says, blessed are those who act justly, who always do what is right. The righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked, they have no such concern. Amos 5:24 says, let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Micah 6:8 famously says, he has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? He says, but to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. And Moses comes onto the scene in a time for the people of Israel, and that it was not just. There was injustice being done in all kinds of ways to the people of Israel. And Moses comes onto the scene, and the question is how is God going to grow Moses? What is he? Moses is kind of born into this Egyptian hierarchy and this place of luxury, and he's given status. But in Exodus 2, we realize Moses is beginning to identify with his true ethnicity, with his true Israelite roots. And so we're going to start with verse 11 in Exodus chapter 2. So this is after Moses had grown up. So one day, after Moses had grown up, and this is roughly he's 40 years old, this is from a number of different passages, he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them at their hard labor. We know this looked like making, bricks, and then later on, bricks without snow, we know, or straw. We know that they were whipped. They were beaten. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Have you ever seen anyone get hit? Have you ever watched a fight up close? Have you ever heard the sound of someone's fist on someone's face? The rage that has to be there when someone literally is in a physical altercation. It's something that is that is very, very primal. And here is Moses, born into this Egyptian hierarchy, and he's realizing, okay, you know what? I'm a Hebrew. I don't know if it was his looks. I don't know exactly how he knew, but no, this is my people. And You know what I feel when I see this? Is this isn't right. And when you think about God's deliverance, when you think about what he does to the oppressed Israelites, we have to realize that in a big way, fighting injustice is at the heart of God's deliverance. And so Moses is born into this. And the question right now is, okay, so how is Moses going to deal with this injustice? You know, when something is just not right, when you can tell oppression is around, what do you do? How do you deal with it? When you see that, when you see someone being treated poorly, what goes on inside of you? How do you respond to that? And so he is born into this. He is experiencing this. And then it says, here's how Moses is going to fight injustice, right? Verse 12. So he sees this going down. He sees this beating. In his conscience, this isn't right. There's got to be something to be done. But in a very secretive way, in a way here with Moses, there's no community. There's no accountability. He's doing it by himself. He looks this way and he looks that way. Okay, no one's watching. I hate this and I hate that person. And so here's what I'm going to do. In secret, I'm going to regulate myself because I know what should be done, right? And so he knows no one is looking, and so he takes it upon himself. He kills the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. Have you been there? You can't stand injustice. It moves inside of you, and you say, you know what? I'm going to take measures into my own hand. I will control it. I will rationalize, or I will be self-righteous. I will make this righteous by myself, without God, without others. He didn't ask God. He didn't ask anybody else. I am going to move into this situation and stop it. Well, I think what we see all around our world, flip on the television, when people are fighting for injustice, but they feel self-righteous, what happens? What happens to you when you feel self-righteous? You feel like, no, I know what to do. It should look this way. I don't want to defer to, wisdom is having a lot of counselors. Or I'm going to seek ye first the kingdom of God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. No, it's I'm going to self-regulate. What happens? Well, when you fight injustice and you have this self-righteous perspective, I think for many of us, rage. We will feel anger at extreme levels. When's the last time that you felt that? Maybe in your home. Something wasn't right. Maybe it wasn't right in your marriage. And you said, you know what? No, I know what's right. It's going to look this way. And you just flip out. Or your spouse flips out. Or maybe it's your kids at you. Or you at your kids. Or maybe it's happened at work. Where you look at this and you say, it isn't right. I'm going to take control of it. You take your hands and you put your hands all over it. I know for me, hey, it can come out in awful ways through, crazy passive aggression, right? Just silence that everybody can hear. Or you will curse. Or, you begin to be physical. Well, that's exactly what happened to Moses. He was fighting injustice and he was self-righteous and he experienced rage. Have you been there? Is God working on anger in you? We know anger is not a sin in and of itself. Jesus felt anger, right? When he walked to the temple and he flipped over tables because his father's house wasn't being treated correctly. Paul says, in your anger, don't sin. But I think we know, what about the debates that you have? Debates that you have about the way in which our world should work. I mean, click on Facebook, right? And listen to a rant. It's you can feel the rage. They know what's right, and I am going to self-regulate. I'm going to be self-righteous, and it comes out, and it poisons who we are. It poisons churches, right? It poisons families. So here he takes it upon himself. What happens next? The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" I mean, obviously Moses here is still feeling good about who he is and what he's done. As far as he knows, no one knows what he did. He took justice into his own hands. He's feeling confident. He's fighting injustice. The Egyptian was killed. And now, oh my goodness, my two Hebrews, they're fighting. You can't do that. I want to be a peacemaker again. I want to fight against this injustice. Here I go. The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then, at that moment, he knew it wasn't a secret. And at a certain level, he realizes the tone of this, he's failed. He fought injustice, right? He was self-righteous, and he went too far. And all of a sudden, Moses was afraid, and he thought, "What I did must have become known," right? I mean, when you think about that statement here, when someone feels self-justified and the rage comes out, but then all of a sudden, here what we have is we have someone who's fighting injustice. He has a self-righteous perspective, and obviously he realizes this has been a failure. What happens when this occurs in the context of a church? People leave, right? That's what we do. We just leave the church. If people fail at a larger level, when they feel like they've been so right and they realize that they failed, I can't be in community anymore. I got to leave this church. I'll go to the mega church down the road and sit in the back row and hide. Or I just won't go anymore. Or I won't show up at different events. Because you know what? Shame kind of waves over people. Waves over me. When I feel like I've got it right, I don't rely on others and the Lord, and I realize I blew it, and I look like a fool. And here's Moses feeling like a fool. At one moment, he was feeling rage, and now he's on the other extreme. Have you been there, or maybe are you there right now? You realize that you've messed up. And at some level, you thought, man, I had good motives. And I really thought I was doing the right thing, but I did not ask the Lord. I was not with him. I was not with other Christians, and I blew it. And now I just want to run. I want to never don the doors of Westtown ever again. I'm never going to youth group again because I royally screwed up. Never. Are you kidding me? Because you can't do that. You can't fail in these types of communities and actually still be accepted. And that's how shame destroys a church, right? That's how shame will destroy a family. And here, the question is, okay, is what's shame and rage, what is this going to do to Moses? I mean, how is this going to affect this man? How will he be used? What is God doing to him? Verse 15. When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. So if you follow that red line, right, from Ramses up there in Egypt all the way over here to the wilderness of Paran up into Midian, he went through the desert there, right? Basically, he's in the desert now. So God, in his providence, has revealed Moses' rage and self-righteousness. He's now revealed he's been exposed as a fraud, and he's feeling all kinds of shame, and so Moses is out, right? And Moses is in the wilderness. And I'm wondering, when you think of the process that God puts people through and needed Moses to go through, because in a lot of ways, if you follow this particular chapter, I think Moses needed to recognize his anger, and Moses needed to recognize, man, I can't fail like this. In other words, his performance-based living. And he felt all kinds of shame, and he was afraid when he was found out. What's God doing here? What's God doing in you? Maybe you felt some of these right now. Man, you know you've got anger issues. They come out because you've got to be right. Or If you fail, you don't want to be around anybody. You don't want to talk to anybody because you are, you know, your identity is directly correlated to success. And you've always generally been a success. Can you show up here? If, hey, your marriage falls apart, if your family falls apart, if your friendships fall apart, will you still show up and be with God? Because, you know, underlying this whole thing of God, what are you doing? What are you doing? Moses is now in the desert. He's nowhere near the Israelites. He's nowhere near helping these Israelites, of which there's probably 2 million. And my question to you is, you know, do you think in God's providence that maybe God brought Moses out to the desert, to a place of isolation, to get his attention? And maybe God is doing that in your life right now. And maybe you need to take this trek that Moses did, because he was here for 40 years. He didn't come back to Israel until, or to Egypt until he was 80. For 40 years. So if you're 40, when you're 80, you come back. And that's when God uses you. I'm sure at some level, Moses thought, you know what? I kind of thought maybe God had big plans for me, but now I'm in Midian, and I got to decide the man I'm going to be. Because I may never go back to Egypt. I may never be front and center on the kind of the battle lines. And the question is when you get to that spot and you're isolated and it's just you and the Lord, are you still alive? Functionally. I mean, that's the question. Do you still care about living? Or as you know, if you read these journal entries of the shooter, I watched this documentary on Columbine, and you just realize the hopelessness when these boys were in isolation, there was no life anymore. I mean, they survived for a little while, and then they said, you know, that's it. Life is chaos, and therefore, I'm going out with a bang. There's really no point. I think for some of you, God has you in the desert. And the question is, God's asking me, and God, it's asking you, am I enough? Is God enough for you? Because God still has a plan for you if you're in the desert, right? God has a plan, and I think for some of us, we can decide, no, I'm just going to survive, and I'm going to just build walls around it. And Moses could have done that. Moses could have done that right here. I mean, if there's any spot to just begin to basically disintegrate as a man, it's right here. Pharaoh's after him. Now he's gone. He's not near any Hebrew, and he's not near any Egyptian. He's just with a bunch of foreigners. And it says, he sat down by a well. And you think, well, is he going to just jump in the well and commit suicide? I mean, what's he going to do? Like, where is Moses? How does he view himself? Well, next two verses, verse 16. And this is what's amazing to me, because right in here you see, I believe Moses make a decision about his heart, makes a decision about who his God is, and his purpose. That his purpose is solely for the Lord, and he cannot let his heart get hard. So it says, now a priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. So they're just coming to this trough, right? Okay, 7 girls, they come to draw water at the well, and some shepherds came along and drove them away. But Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. We are supposed to stop the or help the oppressed. We're supposed to help the fatherless. And here is Moses, and he is in the desert. And you know what this shows? It shows he's still got a heart. And that even though he was, you know, this is roughly 250 miles away from Egypt, that Moses still had a soft heart. So when 7 girls come to a well and shepherds kind of move them or oppress them or, you know, are heavy-handed with them, no, the rough places are made smooth, right? The crooked's got to be made straight. That's Yahweh. That's my God. And his heart is still soft. And so he, what does he do here? He fights injustice. He wants justice or shalom to come to these girls. And was there any, did he have any skin in the game here? No. He was a foreigner. He's with a bunch of Midianites. There's no Egyptians there. There's no, Hebrews there. Why would he do this? I think right here we see Moses, right? Moses has made a decision. He's going to fight for his heart. He's going to believe at a certain level that God has not given up on him. And I'm wondering for you this morning, if you believe, nope, God has given up on me. He is nowhere near me. He's given me a lot of promises, and then all I feel is distance. And I think he has left the building. That's God. And Moses has made a decision here. God has shown him his rage. God has shown him his shame. And in spite of those two things, what could destroy any one of us, he said, you know what? No, here's what I believe. I believe that Genesis 12, 15, and 17 said, the sands of the beach and the stars in the sky to my father Abraham, that he is going to bless the people of Israel with land, the seed, and the blessing. And for you, you have to ask yourself, is that God the same God in your life? And is he faithful to remember who you are and that he has not given up on you? And the answer is yes. But you have to choose to believe that the answer is yes. I have to choose to believe that the answer is yes, that we can be in the desert and decide, you know what? I don't have to be crusty. I can follow him. My audience is one. I have an audience of one. That's how I live my life. And if I'm just going to, meander around in the desert for the next 40 years, then so be it. Irony of ironies. Let's go back to the, I want you to go back one slide to the map. So he's in Midian, right? Look at the wilderness of Paran, kind of up through Kadesh Barnea, up there in the middle. All of that, he's over here in Midian for 40 years before he goes back to Egypt. What happens when he comes back? Irony of irony. He comes back to the same, general area. And for 40 years, what do? They circle. They walk in a circle. And the same question God is asking, when I bring you out to the desert, am I enough? Will you believe that I'll drop manna and that water will come from a rock and I will save my people? And I am faithful that God, the God of the Bible, does not give up on you. Yeah, little you here in this part of Tampa, Florida. You haven't heard from him for a while. You feel like he's distant. But it's fully something else to believe that he is gone. And you know what? Think about a father who has a son or a daughter come to them and just want to spend time with them. Not because they want to go to the movies with a group of friends and they want their dad to say yes. Not because they need a $100 check from their dad. They just want to be around their dad. And being with your dad in the car or being with your dad randomly somewhere is just enough. What does it feel like as a father or as a mother to experience that from your kid? They just want to be with you. And God brings us out to these deserts and says, hey, I just want to be with you. I am enough. I want you to believe that I am your father who is enough. And here, I believe Moses, not perfectly, imperfectly, is saying, yes, you are. Yes, you are enough, God. And I will follow you. And even if it randomly means seven girls come to a well and I say, you know what, I'm not going to allow these shepherds to mess with you because that's just not right. And my heart is for justice in a beautiful way. It's right here, I believe, the power of God. We live out a powerful life when we begin to do these types of things. When there is no ulterior motive in our hearts except for pleasing God, because then I believe God is all over this. Moses doesn't know anything right now. All he knows is that there's some girls need some help. He helps them because of that's who he is. That's his heart. Think about the times you've done, as far as you can tell, The purest thing you can do to help someone with a flat tire when it's out of, you know, it's completely inconvenient, because you just want to help that person because God has helped you. When you do that and there's no reward, I believe that's when the power of God and the blessing of God comes and is all over us. When we as a church do that and don't think, okay, we're going to get a bunch more people or a bunch more money for our church. We just do things for others, right? What happens? When the girls returned to Reuel, that's their dad, he asked them, "Why have you returned so early today?" They answered, an Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." "And where is he?" Reuel asked his daughters. "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." This is the dad of the daughters, and he's like, "What? This guy did that for what? For no good reason? Just to help my baby girls? Tell him to come over. I want to meet this dude." Verse 21, here's God working. Moses agrees to stay with the man, who then gives his daughter, Zipporah, to Moses in marriage. Here's Moses sitting by a well, does this random, quote, random act of kindness. God begins to move, prepare, gives him a wife. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom, saying what? "I've become a foreigner in a foreign land." There's something about Moses saying that that is qualitatively different than earlier Moses. He is in the desert, in this place, Midian, God-forsaken town, and he's, "You know what? I'm not an Egyptian. I mean, I'm not a Midianite. I'm a foreigner. And you know what? I'm a foreigner in a foreign land. I'm a pilgrim, right? I am not made for this world. It's who I am. And I wrestle with that tension, and I'm going to be okay with it. In fact, I'm even going to call my son that." When you accept the circumstances that God's given you, when you accept that he is taking you into the desert to pull the rage out of you, to work out the shame in you, I believe you will see the Lord work. And here, when you have, now what do we have? We have a guy who is fighting injustice, but is fully aware of his own sinfulness. When you begin to fight injustice, and you would tell somebody this, "You know, we can talk about the way in which our world should work, and I can't stand this policy that I see, but I want you to know this. As I talk about this framework for maybe the way the United States I think should work, I want you to know this. I'm an angry dude. And I got sin in me. And I have shame issues. And if I fail, I'm liable to run. And if I get angry, I might not just hit somebody. I might kill somebody. That's who I am before I talk about me being used to fight injustice. I just want you to know that I am a sinner. And I need grace. Before I talk about and get on this white horse and say, this is the way we should do it, you just need to know that I am a wretch, right? I am a worm. And that is first and foremost. And it's only by the grace of God, there go I. When we do that, we have a different dude. You and me, we're different people. We're all of a sudden easier to be around. People are like, "Oh man, they're not going to be heavy-handed. They are so aware of who they are." And Moses was absolutely humbled. Have you been through this process before where you can say that? "Hey, I am aware and I'm free to be aware that I'm a killer and that I am and that I'm a runner." Because Moses knew that. Fundamentally, here's what I am. I am a killer and I'm a runner, and I'm aware of that sinfulness, and it's only by the grace of God that I have any hope, right? And that's his mindset, and that's where he is. He's walking the fields in Midian, right? Slow fade. End chapter 2. Okay, here's some random guy that lived back in the day, and now that's it, right? That's it. Just a guy who's caring for sheep in the forest. But what do we know? Last two verses. God has beautiful plans for all of us. That during that long period, right, the king of Egypt died. And maybe there was an opportunity during this transition for movement. And once again, the Israelites, they groaned in their slavery and they cried out. and their cry for help, because of their slavery went up to God. They groaned, they'd groaned before, but they're groaning again. They're crying out to God. They're still going to him. God, we need you. And what happens? Look at the four verbs in these last two verses. God heard their groaning. He remembered his covenant with Abraham. Oh, that's right. I promise. Of course I'm going to do that. Of course. With Isaac, right? With Jacob. I changed Jacob's name to Israel. That's who these people are. So God looked on the Israelites. He looked on them. Okay, it's about time. I'm looking on you in ways that I haven't looked on you. It's been 400 years, I know that, but I will take you out of that, and it's my plan, and it's my way. And he was concerned about them, right? Kettle drums. I hear kettle drums, right? It's about ready to start. Here we go, right? When you begin to see and feel that foreshadowing in those last couple verses, you understand that it's God. That God is working at all times. God will not give up on you. And it's only our hope, right, in the faithfulness, the covenant faithfulness of Almighty God, right? Going against a God, a deity like Pharaoh, the king who actually died. Yeah, we used to worship you, Pharaoh. And you know what? That Pharaoh died. And he had all this makeup on. He was riding this chariot. And he looked huge and powerful. And you know what? He died. And no longer do we hear from that guy. That guy wasn't the true God. Our only hope, Israel, is if we trust the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he will be faithful, and he is going to be faithful in his way, on in his timetable. But that is our only hope. Everything else will let us down, and Moses is learning this lesson. And what God is doing here is he is making Moses the man he needs him to be. That he would be a guy that would walk into the court of Pharaoh and say, you know what, Aaron, I stutter. I stammer. I can't get out the words, right? Aaron, I can't speak to Pharaoh. You have to. Only a humble dude does that. Only a humble guy says to Aaron, you speak much better than I do. You talk to the Pharaoh. I know I'm God's man and I'm hearing from God, but I'm going to tell you what God told me to tell you to tell Pharaoh. Only someone who's humble and has gone through the exposure of his own rage and what his own shame, and now he's ready. And I think it's the same for us. What part of you is God working on? God does not randomly bring you into the desert just to take his magnifying glass out and just burn you, right? He doesn't. He brings you so that you will give him your attention and that he will sanctify the refiner's fire, right? He's got to turn the heat up so he can mold you. But we don't want the heat. We don't want it. And he says, that's the way I do it. I'm turning the heat up in your lives, Westtown, because I need you to what? I need you to fight for injustice against it. I need you to help the oppressed, the fatherless, the widow. Here, right, the depressed, the anxious, I need you to help them. But only when you rely on me, Westtown. And that's what he's doing to Moses, and I feel like that's what he wants to do to us. Where are you? And until we fully rely on the Lord, until we get to that point where we're helping girls that we don't know from being oppressed just because it's in front of God without, you know, without any reward, that's when we know, right? Those are the indicators that we're right. Okay, it's time. When you're that humble, because Jesus said, this is going to be weird, but the first is going to be last, and the way up is the way down. It's the upside down kingdom. That's the way it is. Blessed are those that mourn. What? Blessed are the peacemakers, right? Blessed are those that are poor in spirit. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst for righteousness. The way up is the way down. It's the upside down kingdom. It's counterintuitive. Moses out into the desert to meet God. To refine him. What is he doing to you? He will never give up on you. He wants to make us into the church he needs us to be. And my prayer is that we're aware of our sinfulness. We continue fighting. And that looks like humility and reliance upon him. Please make this story not just an Old Testament story, an old narrative that you hear. We believe that the Bible is active and living, and it's not by providence that on February the 18th, 2018, that you're here this morning and you're listening to this passage. What is he trying to tell you? What is he trying to tell our church? Let's pray and ask him to work in our hearts. God, you are so good to us, and you're going to use the story of Moses over the next 4 or 5 weeks to walk us actually to the resurrection. And may we find ourselves in need of a Savior, because Moses needed a Savior. He needed a God that was covenant, that covenanted with his father Abraham, and that would be faithful to that. And we know ultimately, God, it all pointed to the sacrifice of Jesus, and that we're all forgiven. Moses is forgiven because of the works, the perfect works of Jesus thousands of years later. That he was vindicated, God. Moses was vindicated. Moses was justified because of the work of Jesus, because you were faithful and you'd always have a remnant. Thank you for that truth. God, may we be a church that is faithful, that learns to be faithful, that learns to fight against injustice. But may we do it with the humility and an utter reliance upon your grace, God, and your mercy in your name. Amen.